Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English. We're in the middle of international break. We're almost there. We're almost at the end of it, but there's still quite a lot to talk about, and it's the final round of games, so a lot of loose ends to tie up, which we'll try to do today. Joining me for this is Ollie Young-Miles. Hello, Ollie.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Yeah, very well. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Also joining us is Mohammed Butt. Hello, Mo.
Hey, Nick. How's it going, my friend?
Good. I'm good. Two of our arch regulars, as I said in my Q&A tweet out. As I said, lots to tie up. Premier League action is coming back soon. We're all excited about that. But let's talk a little bit about Lithuania 0, England 1. Ollie, it was another pretty insipid performance. A lot of the players looked like they were just trying to get through the international break without causing themselves injury. I think that's true for pretty much everyone. Just about enough. A Harry Kane penalty won it. England never really looked like they got out of third gear, though.
No, not at all. It's been a thoroughly sort of underwhelming and uninspiring qualification campaign. England have got there very easily in the end, but I think it's 18 goals from 10 games in a pretty limited group, really. Mm. You know, they haven't conceded many, but they haven't particularly excited either. And I think this Lithuania game sort of encapsulated the whole qualification process in one match. As you said, they didn't get out of second gear at
Ooh,
all.
You're saying second. I said third.
Interesting. I would say first, to be honest, mate.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, Harry Kane's penalty was great, but other than that, there wasn't too much really to shout about. And yeah, I mean, England have qualified, but I'd like to sort of, I wonder how they would have done in another group, put it that way. I think this group was very, very easy, and England didn't really have to do much to qualify. I think in a different group, they would have struggled.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think almost a better group would have brought better out of England, if that makes any sense. I think the way Southgate's obviously focused on the defence first, making England actually hard to beat, and then he's going to work his way up through that, right? And I just think, in a group where England should have actually dominated the games and bossed these opponents, I think they've struggled with the idea of being the dominant side. I think if it'd been, I mean, yeah, I know they're only been friendlies, but you look at England versus better sides, and not to say they would beat the likes of Germany if they'd been paired up for a group with them, but it would have brought the best out of England. I think being the overwhelming favourites in that group really didn't jive well with this young England squad. I think having a behemoth to play off would have really made them play better stuff, would have forced them to play better stuff.
It doesn't look like they're a team that necessarily set up or have the players required to break down a deep-lying team. Well, they look like a counter-attacking force.
Well, there's no central midfielders. I mean, there's only one, and he played very well on Sunday, but that's literally it. Apart from Harry Winks, there aren't central midfielders in the England squad. None really coming through in the setup either, and that's the problem.
Well, Ollie, let's talk a bit about Harry Winks.
Yeah.
He came in and showed basically what he can do. He can provide very good positional cover. He's good at intercepting. He's always available to take on the ball. And he provides those passes in between the lines. A lot of players have been considering, a lot of people have been considering the way he played to the way Jack Wilshere used to play when he was at the base of the diamond, which is probably quite an apt comparison. He was very impressive.
Yeah, they're very, very similar. I mean, I made a point last week. I did an article on why Winks' call-up made sense. And I made the sort of point that Roy Hodgson was so desperate to get Jack Wilshere in the Euro 2016 squad. Remember, that was a season Wilshere played, I think, 100 minutes, just over 100 minutes in the Premier League. And Hodgson still picked him over Danny Drinkwater because there's no one in that squad that can drive the ball forward and retain possession like Wilshere does. Winks is cut from the same sort of cloth. He very, very rarely gives the ball away. And I think in recent months as well, Spurs have encouraged him to actually drive with the ball forward, and we've seen that sort of come to the fore a little bit more recently. But it does show the shallow pool that England have got at the moment, that he's coming in.
Yeah.
He's only made four Premier League starts, and yet he's getting a call up for England. But he did play very well. He took his chance, and given the lack of options, I think if he can continue to get minutes at Spurs while Moussa Dembele's injured, there could well be a place for him in the World Cup squad.
I think he also appeared in black boots, all black boots, which was great for purists of the game.
I just think what impressed me most about him was, obviously, when you watch him play for Spurs, he's nominally a defensive midfielder. He screens well, he moves the ball on well, and he does occasionally move a bit further forward. But he knew, playing with the back three behind him, he had a license, and he really went not box to box, but he really pushed forward at the right moments. He made the right kind of surges into midfield, and
provided a foil for Jordan Henderson as well, who often needs that.
And I mean, Henderson finally looked comfortable playing in a box to box defensive midfield role, which this formation allows him to play. And he's not a defensive midfielder. And Eric Dyer is a defensive midfielder, but is very limited in terms of moving the ball. I think what this game and what this qualification period should have shown us is, as you say, Nick, England are a counter-attacking side, and there should be no shame in that. They've had this whole movement in the last 10 years of trying to develop footballing midfielders, but it hasn't taken hold, I think partly because that's just not the way English players are raised.
Well, let's talk a bit about one of their counter-attacking talents, someone who's normally very good on the break, Dele Alli, who looked incredibly wasteful against Lithuania and hasn't been at his best for quite a while.
Yeah.
Again, another sort of 90 minutes of him picking up the ball in good areas, beating one man, getting into a promising position and either being too selfish or taking the wrong decision. He needs to get out of this slump. I know he's young, but it feels like he needs to kick on a bit here.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the lack of maturity that Dele has. His problem is that, you know, when he's playing poorly, he lets it get to him. And, I mean, Ollie will tell you all about this, but you can see very blatantly, I mean, you know, Christian Eriksen, that front two is two of those players are Spurs players, right? Mm. And you can very much see that the key one in that front three is actually Christian Eriksen, and he's the one that isn't playing there. Dele just looks a lot. I mean, Kane is Kane. He can get on without him because he's a striker. But Dele is a very unique kind of talent. It's kind of, he's like such a weird combination of skill sets in that he's not really a great passer. He's a good dribbler. He's not really a great passer. And he's a great goal scorer, but he's not necessarily. You need to get him in the right positions. Like you're saying, picked at the wrong positions. I think for Dele, they were bad positions. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you give the ball to a dribbling playmaker, someone like Eriksen, who could drift right past a guy and then create something. Mm. For Dele, you want him on the sharp end of things, scoring goals. You know, and England don't have an Eriksen. That's the problem.
We've talked about this before, Ollie, and it's a question that we've got from Matt Brownie Cake. We've been talking about Rooney's omission from the side, and there's maybe a bit more fluency up top and less of those painfully slow chipped balls over the top to the right back that Rooney used to play. Matt Brownie Cake asks, now that all the golden oldies are out of the England setup, why are England still such a shambles? Is it fair to call them a shambles, I think, first of all, and then is it fair to ascertain that they still are at the same level that they were when the golden oldies in inverted commas were there?
I think shambles is probably a little bit strong. I think if you're looking for a shambles, then look at the Netherlands over the past two qualification campaigns.
Yes.
You know, that is a shambolic team right there. England have done what they needed to do. It wasn't pretty, but they did it. I just think that, you know, the issue with England, there's a lot of issues. I think it mainly comes down to identity. There still is an identity of play at, you know, in the England side. You look at every successful national team over the past decade, there's always been an identity there that's been cultivated through the youth teams, and England just don't do that. Mm. Spain had the same sort of generation of players coming through, playing in youth tournaments and going all the way up to the seniors and winning things. Germany the same.
You could argue that maybe England are doing that now. The under-17s looking very impressive.
Yeah, that's the one sort of positive thing I think at the moment in terms of the national team is that the youth teams look really, really good. The under-17s on Sunday. I mean, yeah, if you've got time, catch the highlights of that game because Jadon Sancho was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Angel Gomez scored a ridiculous free kick. George McKechnie was great. Phil Foden's great. So there's a lot of really good young players coming through. And I just think with England, they need to cultivate that group. You know, a lot of their youth teams have been doing well over the past few months, and they just need to get those players playing regular minutes.
Yeah, isn't that's the problem, isn't it, though? Is that they can play regular minutes youth team, but then they can't bring them through. You bring up the under-17s and under-20s won the World Cup. Mm. Great stuff. But then under-21s, they didn't take all available players. They could have taken Dele Alli, could have taken Marcus Rashford.
It's been an issue for ages, and it's the sort of club versus country thing is a massive issue in English football more than anywhere else.
They don't take these tournaments seriously.
They could probably win them.
It's not even about winning. It's about developing a mentality, a tournament mentality. Players then understand how to go away together as a group. You look at the Euro 2009 under 21 Euros. It was Germany versus England. You look at the Germany 11, and I think five of them played in the World Cup final in 2009. 5 years later, it's a great breeding ground for talent. And England, you know, you look at now in Spain, they're starting to bring through the players Thiago, Isco, the players from the 2011 and 13 Euro win. You know, Lopetegui was in charge then. So. That's like Ollie said, identity is England's problem. They don't know are we a possession team, are we a counter-attacking team? We don't know how to impress it on the first team, let alone down through the ranks.
With England, they basically just mould their team around which club side is doing the best and has the most English players.
So Spurs.
Yeah, exactly. So at the moment it's Spurs. You know, Spurs' best players Dele Alli, well, England's best players are Spurs players like Dele Alli and Harry Kane, but Mo touched on it earlier. You don't build a team around Dele Alli, you build it around a Christian Eriksen type player, because at Spurs, Dele Alli doesn't touch the ball that much in the final third. Eriksen is the one that sort of knits everything together. Mm. But England, Dele's role is kind of the Eriksen role, and it just doesn't work as well.
Let's talk about Scotland. Speaking of lack of tournament mentality, Slovenia 2, Scotland 2. Scotland were in the lead, and then, I mean, let's face it, bottled it pretty spectacularly to a Slovenia team with nothing to play for. Mo, Gordon Strachan says Scotland are genetically behind the rest. Has he got a point? Has he ever been to Scotland?
He's tiny, and he played the part. He was when Scotland were good. He was playing, and he's midget.
They're not the best rugby team in the world, but they have a huge rugby team. They're not small Scottish people.
Look, I think there's so much to unpack in what he said. I don't think we have time to get into it right now. The racial elements of what he said. But look, let's just put it this way. Scotland aren't good because they don't invest in grassroots football enough, and that's basically just it. Scotland have been bad for a while, but they really, really started going downhill once Celtic and Rangers basically just stopped playing Scottish players, and they had that whole period in the middle of the century, the last decade, with Martin O'Neill in charge of Celtic in particular, where they just had like one Scottish player, and then for Asia it was just like Scott Brown, and that's the problem when your two best teams don't give young Scottish players a chance in the Champions League, which those guys were always in. This is what happens. The game deteriorates. Your best players are now playing on loan at Blackburn and Brentford and stuff like that.
It all relies on Brendan Rodgers, is what you're saying.
I mean, kind of, yeah. Honestly, kind of, yeah. If he brings through more Scottish players, that's going to be a huge thing. It's just a matter of experience, and they need to sort out their whole FA structure, man, really. I mean, it's just a mess.
Ollie, Squawker Talker exclusive is that you're part Scottish, so your emotion...
Cool. I'm actually full.
You're full Scottish, even better. So you're emotionally invested in this.
Yeah.
How can Scotland turn things around? I don't think blaming genetics is the way forward, because that seems like the sort of excuse which just cannot be solved.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a talent shortage there, and there has been for a long time, but I think if you look at the Northern Irish team, although they've probably got better key players than Scotland do, you'd say their resources are even smaller than Scotland's are, and yet they are sort of doing well. I think also mentality sort of thing creeps into it as well with Scotland. It's, the past few qualification campaigns, they've sort of been second or third, and they haven't really been able to get over the line. We saw all the home nations and the Republic of Ireland qualifying for Euro 2016, and Scotland were never really in the running for that. I just think they need better players. They need tactic. They need more of a tactical identity as well. Strachan has come under a lot of fire this qualification campaign, and they just need a big result, I think, to galvanise them, because it's just the same old story, really, as far as they're concerned.
How do you score twice against Jan Oblak and then still not win?
They were good goals as well.
You put two past probably the second best goalkeeper in the world, and then throw it away. It's unforgivable.
We saw Slovenia weren't the most threatening against England, so maybe next time, Scotland fans. We mentioned Northern Ireland. Norway won, Northern Ireland 0, but it didn't matter because Scotland didn't beat Slovenia. So Northern Ireland have two legs to earn only their fourth qualification ever for a World Cup. Mo, 1.18 million people in Northern Ireland. This is a pretty remarkable achievement. We've been talking about it for a while.
Yeah.
Michael O'Neill's done a great job, but so have the players.
Michael O'Neill's done a really great job. Are you hinting at it there? This is what you can do on limited resources if you have the right tactical approach and the right ability to, let's say, just big up your players, give them confidence and belief in themselves. You can do great things in international football, especially in UEFA qualifying, where there's a lot of chaff. Not much wheat. So,
a lot of chaff, not much wheat.
In UEFA, there's really a chance if you have put a good few running games, you can get somewhere. And Michael O'Neill has done just that. Northern Ireland were really good Euro 2016, and I think they're going to be good at the World Cup as well if they get there. They're a promising young side. Lots of there's almost more tactical clarity there than with England, to be honest.
I think one thing that actually hindered Northern Ireland yesterday was knowing the Scotland result. Obviously, that sort of ensured that they would qualify for the playoffs, but they had already selected their team for the game, which had six players on a yellow card. And you could sort of tell that these guys were, walking a bit of a tightrope.
Yeah, they
just didn't want to put themselves about at all. It was a very sort of un-Northern Ireland performance that we've been accustomed to. They didn't really get near Norway. And it was only the fourth defeat they've had in their last 20 qualifiers, and two of those have been against Germany as well. So, I mean, obviously, it's good for them to be second and secure their playoff place. But if they'd drawn or even won, then, you know, they probably would have been seeded.
Wow.
So they would have avoided the likes of Portugal and Italy. As it is, they could face a bit of a challenge to get there now. But, yeah, still it's a remarkable achievement. And Michael O'Neill has done incredible there.
Well, we'll see who they draw once all the loose ends have been tied up. Rounding off the home nations, it's Wales versus Ireland tonight. A win should see either team get into the playoff round, but a Serbia slip-up against Georgia could mean that either team could qualify automatically should they win. Wales are probably the favourites. It's knockout football at its purest here, Mo.
Yeah. I just wish Barrett Bale was fit.
Because
if Bale was fit, it would be, the game would proceed exactly as it's going to proceed tonight, except in the 88th minute, Gareth Bale would show up and rocket one into the top corner. That's just what he does for, you know, Wales are such a one-man team. And I mean, everyone can criticise Chris Coleman all they want, but the reason they've fallen off since Euro 2016...
Been injured.
It's because Bale's been injured. He hasn't been fully fit, hasn't been able to lift them. I mean, Aaron Ramsey is great for them. Yes, okay, Joe Ledley... Ben Davis does very well left centre back. You know, they're all great players. Even Ramsey's, you know, really, really transcendent sometimes for Wales. But it all hinges on Gareth Bale just being so supernaturally good. And I mean, you know, it's a real shame. If he was playing tonight, I would think Wales would walk it. He's out. I mean, it's going to be tricky. If the crowd can really get behind Wales, I think they're probably the favourites.
Oh, they will.
They
will. 7:45 kickoff.
It would be great to see Wales back at another tournament. I think it would, and plus then you'd imagine by the summer Bale would be fit and be able to give it a go. And I mean, he did so well. I mean, Wales as a team did so well Euro 2016. You know, it would be great. I mean, you know, no offense to Ireland. Okay, we all love Ireland, but you know, it would be great if Wales could get there. I think
the bigger news for Ireland, Ollie, is that Shane Long is out, which is obviously such a huge miss for them. A man who has not scored for Ireland since I can't remember. I mean, he just never scored. He hasn't scored a goal for almost a year, I think, at this point. Yeah. But Ireland's approach to this game, how should they go about? Because Wales have a very, very chunky defence and a lot of running in midfield, so they're not the easiest to score against.
No, not at all. I mean, they have fallen off a little bit since Euro 2016, but Wales haven't been beaten in this qualifying campaign. You know, they've been very difficult to break down. They haven't scored many, but they haven't conceded many either. And Shane Long is actually a really big miss for them because, you know, if you look at the Welsh defence, Ashley Williams hasn't exactly been at his best this season, and you'd think that Long could really trouble him with his pace. So it's going to be a big miss for Ireland. You know, he actually got that goal to beat Germany as well in the last qualifying campaign. So it's a big miss for Ireland. It could go anyway. I think the good thing for Wales is Bale's replacement, Tom Lawrence, stepped up and scored their winning goal the other day. So yeah, you never know. It's going to be very tight.
Fun to watch as well.
Yeah, it's a playoff to get to the playoffs. So finally, we've got
playoff-ception.
Yeah, a good international game to get stuck into right in the middle.
Some other notables that we want to cover off here. Egypt have qualified for the first time in 22 years, is it?
27 years.
Absolute scenes. Mohamed Salah got two. He converted a late penalty to seal the deal. The scenes of jubilation were pretty amazing. Oh,
it was absolutely unreal. The commentator was magnificent. When Congreve class, you start going, haram. Haram, really, over and over again. And then when Salah scored, it was Allah, it was absolutely wonderful. Egypt, they're just their third World Cup ever. They've won four African Cup of Nations since the last time they were at a World Cup.
Yeah.
Inexplicably, this side, the amazing talented side with Mohamed Aboutrika in goal, in attack, sorry, you know, they could just never get together for World Cup qualification. They would always fall apart. But they're a great tournament team, Egypt. When they get a tournament mentality up like nobody's business. It's like Algeria at the last World Cup times 10, you know? So it's going to be, now they're actually at the tournament, Salah was unreal. Egypt scored seven goals in this stage of qualification. Five were scored by Salah, two were set up by Salah. He has been Mr. Everything
for
Egypt.
He is the talisman of all talismans.
He is absolutely.
And also, it's probably not well known enough how football crazy Egypt is, Ollie. Yeah. Any time there's any Mo Salah, like, or Egyptian player in a online poll, Arsenal fans get absolutely routed. I mean, they are crazy about this.
Yeah, we've seen it a bit recently since Salah's gone to Liverpool. He's just winning everything because it's been hijacked by crazy football fan Egyptians. But yeah, you know, they've kind of got a bit of a golden generation going on in Egypt. You know, I mean, Mohamed Elneny might not get much of a kick at Arsenal, but he's a very, very useful player to have in international football because he can just run for days on end. They've got Mo Salah. They've got a 44-year-old goalkeeper as well who made his debut in 96.
Crazy.
And he's going to be making his first appearance at a World Cup.
I just hope he doesn't get injured.
Yeah. Hopefully not. Yeah.
Tariq Hamid.
Yeah, they've got loads. Trezeguet as well has been great. It's great to see them here. They won, was it three African nations in a row?
Between 2006 and 2010, and they
missed out then. So yeah, it's long overdue that they've qualified, and it will be great to see them in there.
Salah wasn't even born the last time they're at a World Cup.
Well, there you go. That says it all. Poland have qualified thanks again to Lewandowski, who's up to 16 goals in qualifying this campaign.
You know what? I'm one ahead
of Ronaldo, who's on 15.
That in itself is crazy. I'm not going to be impressed by Lewandowski until he has a big match and doesn't bottle again, because I will never forgive him for what Poland were an amazing, amazing team.
I didn't realise Lewandowski needed your forgiveness.
He needs my forgiveness, man. No, honestly, come on. Poland were so good at Euro 2016.
They were good.
They were, and then just right until they weren't. You know, just completely lost their nerve. I'm hoping for a great, because they're a really good side. They've got, you know, Grzycki plays. I mean, you know, we say what about his performance in the Premier League. Grzycki's really good for Poland.
Yeah.
Lewandowski is brilliant. Krzyzewiak is a superb midfielder.
The bad news for them is that Piszczek's got a knee injury, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's always got some sort of injury. Poor guy. I mean, let's hope it's not too serious and he can at least be back for the tournament. I mean, yeah, Poland are great fun. I really hope they make it. Well, they've made it, but I really hope they do well at the tournament. Do themselves justice.
They're good fun to watch. Portugal play Switzerland tomorrow, effectively needing a win to guarantee qualification because they've got a massively superior goal difference to Switzerland and they're only 3 points behind. I mean, you really wouldn't want to face Switzerland or Portugal in a second-round playoff, would you? Basically, either of those teams is guaranteed to go through. And, I mean, you fancy Ronaldo to get a goal or two in this game. It's in Portugal, so they're probably the favourites for this, aren't they?
Well, yeah, Ronaldo dragged them to the 2014 World Cup in Sweden. He basically dragged them single-handedly. And now he's got a great accomplice in André Silva, who's brilliant at international level. He's been banging goals in for the last year or so for Portugal. I think he's got 11 in 16 or something like that. So he's in red-hot form for Portugal. But Switzerland, I mean, you'd have to feel sorry for them if they lose this and drop out, because these two teams, looking at their points, Switzerland on 27, Portugal on 24, they both deserve to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, whoever gets them in the playoff will be facing a really tough ask to get through, because they've just both steamrolled their group, really.
Yeah, I reckon Portugal. I reckon Cristiano, if you ask him, he'd prefer to go to the playoffs, because then that's right around Ballon d'Or's voting time.
There are more goals,
more
glory.
Well, that's what won in the 2013 Ballon d'Or. Literally, he was actually quite poor in the actual qualification. They had to go into a playoff, and then he smashed Sweden in the playoff. Yeah. And that, with the voting extension,
it was Ronaldo against Ibrahimovic.
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of the most amazing solo performances.
Just massacred them. Amazing display of finishing, and yeah, that's what won in the tournament.
Now it's time to hand over to Mohamed Butt to try and make sense of the South American qualifying group. So the main focus, Mo, is on Argentina, because right now, as it stands, they're not going to the World Cup.
Amazingly.
After they bottled about 15 chances that Messi put on a plate against Peru. They're playing Bolivia in La Paz.
Not Bolivia, but Ecuador in Quito.
In Quito, which is also a high altitude location.
It's not quite La Paz, but
it's pretty awkward. Players have been known to have oxygen after the game. But that group is insane.
This is the best thing about South American qualifying, is that it's the same teams all the time. It's the sustained 10-team group, and they all hate each other. So there's so many rivalries and so much. I mean, even when the games are bad and the teams are disjointed, there's just so much animosity going into the things. It's just great fun to watch. I mean, yeah, Colombia and Peru are playing each other. They're above they're both above Argentina right now. So the thing is, their result will open up, whatever the result is, one of those two teams will drop down. Argentina, if they win, will go to the World Cup. But they have to win, and they've only won twice in their history in Quito. So it's a huge ask. I mean, it would be almost unthinkable for a team with the amount of attacking players that Argentina have to not make the World Cup.
But and Sampaoli as coach.
I mean, the thing is, Sampaoli has actually, if you look at his, look at the results, he hasn't done anything. But if you look at the way they're playing, they are much better now than they have been in I don't know how long. They play as a team that play cohesively. They play through Messi. The players work for Messi. The problem is he's sorted the defence out. They're not really conceding many chances or goals. Mm. Midfield is looking good. They're creating chances, but they haven't got that finishing touch yet. Mm. And I mean, Aguero's injury has come at the absolute worst time because he's always been bad for Argentina, but he's now it's starting to click for him under Pep. Mm. He could actually finally have come good for Argentina. Mm. But his injury has come at the worst time because you can't put Higuain. He's always terrible for Argentina and he's not even playing well for Juventus right now. Dybala's not a number nine. Icardi's not fit. You know, they're playing Benedetto. You know, it's a bit
awkward. And Ollie, they're also missing Ava Banega, who extraordinarily snapped his cruciate ligament, then insisted on going back on the pitch. Oh, sorry. Gago. That was Gago.
Fernando Gago.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually incredible. We're talking about their attacking talent. They've only outscored Bolivia in this qualifying campaign, which is just mental. They've got 16 goals from 17 games, I think, which is incredible. And even more incredibly, Brazil are the only team to have definitely secured their place at the World Cup. Uruguay pretty much there. I think they've got a plus 10 goal difference and they're second. So they're essentially there too. But there's five teams battling for three spots in their final game. So, I mean, it is really exciting. The Colombia-Peru game is massive. Colombia, I think, are fourth and Peru are fifth. So, you know, that's a big, big, big game. Paraguay as well are suddenly... They have a great chance of getting through. They're seventh at the moment, but they beat Colombia with 89th minute and 92nd minute goals last week. Mm. And they've got Venezuela at home, and Venezuela are bottom, I think. So they've suddenly got a great chance of qualifying. So, you know, there's loads to play for. And yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how it all pans out.
One more situation to cover off. It is Australia versus Syria, the second leg. 1-1 from the first leg, but away goals count double. Syria got a semi-controversial late penalty in that game, which won you 92 quid, lest we forget. I mean, we watched the game in the office with quite a lot of excitement.
On YouTube.
On YouTube, it was streaming on YouTube. And the Syrians really posed Australia a lot of problems in that second half. I mean, it was consistent pressure throughout.
It was an amazing game. The first half, they looked slightly overawed by the whole thing, and Australia nearly... went 2-0 up in the opening stages of the second half. I think it was Tommy Juric hit the post twice in the same move.
Yeah.
But then after that, it was just one-way traffic. Syria completely dominated them, carved out loads of really good opportunities. I think it was Omar Al-Salam is their number nine and Omar Kabin is sort of a number 10 type winger. They were causing them all sorts of problems. And they were fully deserving of at least a draw, I think, in the end. The penalty he absolutely slotted into the top corner.
Professional stuff.
Yeah.
We've had a question from Mr. Haynes who asks, who are the most overrated / underrated teams going into the World Cup? I'll come to both of you one at a time. We'll probably start with overrated. Here's just a list of the qualified teams, just to remind everyone. As of right now, is Russia, Brazil, Belgium, Iran, Japan, Mexico, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Germany, Spain, Nigeria, Costa Rica, Poland, Egypt, and England, obviously. Who are the most overrated teams in that list so far, Mo?
England and Belgium, I think.
Belgium?
Belgium have got an insane amount of talent, but it's just they've had an insane amount of talent for a while now. They can't seem to make it stick. I mean,
do you not reckon they're a little bit older, a little bit wiser than the Euros?
The problem with Belgium is, I mean, first off, they got Roberto Martinez as their manager, and you know, I mean, he's great in short bursts, but I mean, what's he? You know, he's only ever won one thing, so that's tricky. But also, the problem is their fullbacks aren't great, and to be really good in international football, especially if you want to unleash
Mounier
your wingers,
hasn't Mounier like assisted or scored 9 of their last 12 goals?
But yeah, but against who though? Like Gibraltar, you know, they're not going to face that kind of quality at the tournament. This is the problem. It's you know, Jordan Lukaku, especially him being bad, is a real problem because they need to unleash Hazard as best as they can, and Hazard is way too prone to just sort of meandering through a game, waiting for everyone to get tired, and then just deciding to do something.
Okay.
They're on paper, Belgium are brilliant, but
in practice,
not so much. And especially he doesn't even play Nainggolan, who is their best midfielder by far.
Ollie, who do you reckon most overrated team of the ones that are qualified?
I was going to say Belgium as well.
you can agree.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe not overrated right now, but I just think it's time for them to deliver a major tournament. It's their third successive qualification, and the previous two, they haven't really come up and delivered. So this is a big tournament for them, especially, you know, looking at it, a lot of their really important players are not getting on, but likes of Vertonghen and Dembele and Fellaini are sort of reaching 30.
This is what everyone has been anticipating for quite a while. This is the golden generation, yeah, peak this is era.
Exactly. This is the tournament that I think everyone sort of pinpointed as the one that everything sort of clicked into gear for them. Mm. So yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see how they get on. The thing, I mean, Mo touched upon it. This is looking like a Martinez team. They beat Bosnia 4-3. At the weekend, which is just peak Martinez. Like, they've got some of the best defenders in England, and they were just all over the place. So, yeah, I mean, Belgium have got a big ask to show what they can do at the World Cup.
And one of the best goalkeepers, let's not forget.
Yeah, exactly.
Same question for you, Ollie. Underrated team on that list. Who do you think is going to might spring a surprise from the ones that have qualified so far?
Probably Mexico. They've pretty much breezed through their
classic World Cup.
Yeah,
underachievers.
Yeah, I mean their league is pretty strong. You know, if you're looking at leagues outside of Europe, the Mexican league is probably the strongest.
Ravel Morrison tearing it up.
Yeah, exactly. He scored a wonder goal at the weekend.
Yeah, if you search for the video online, it's an absolute crackerjack.
Yeah, I mean they've got a lot of good players, and they're always well organized. They've got huge tournament experience. Depending on who they draw, I think they could definitely reach the knockout stages.
Mo, who do you reckon underrated teams in that list?
I mean, Egypt, I think, are underrated. I think people underrate them. I think their tournament mentality is exceptional, I think, and they'll get so up for the World Cup. I think the players will deliver. I think the players are hardy enough to deliver, even if they'll have slip-ups here and there. And, I mean, weirdly enough, I think Spain.
Underrated?
But in the sense that I think people are not, because they're not 2010 vintage God team, you know, dominating everyone. Uh-huh. Everyone's just sort of like, yeah, Spain are good. I think Spain are very good, and I think they have a lot more variety to the way they play. Alvaro Morata, Diego Costa, they have those two proper number nines. I mean, uh-huh, they won the World Cup with an absolute garbage fire of a number nine, if Fernando Torres, remember, let's not forget. and they haven't had a good number nine since David Villa broke his leg, really. And, you know, now they've got two. Morata's playing exceptionally for Chelsea. Diego Costa's going to be really good. Their midfield is obviously as brilliant as ever. In defence, this is probably the last chance they're going to get to have Piqué and Ramos together. So those two are really going to want to go out on a high. You know, all the talk about independence and everything, I think is just going to, weirdly, I think is going to unify the teams. I think they've all stepped out, not come out all guns blazing, but they are all backing Piqué. No one's ostracising. I think that makes a huge difference to not only including their best defender or the second best defender, but also it doesn't help make the Barcelona players feel at odds in the squad. Like Busquets is the key player in their squad, so I think they've got a really, really good shout.
Spain, unexpected shout, but one we want to look at. Other news today is Ballon d'Or nominees are being revealed. Ooh, exciting. So France Football are doing this thing that they do every year where they announce the nominees in a really staggered way, which is very annoying for every football journalist in the world, and frankly a bit pointless if you ask me. But here's who we know so far. There are more coming, so don't panic when Messi and Ronaldo aren't on this list, but here's who we know so far. Neymar, Modric, Dybala, Marcelo, Kante, Suarez, Sergio Ramos, Jan Oblak, Coutinho, Mertens, Kevin De Bruyne, Lewandowski, David De Gea, Harry Kane, and Edin Dzeko. Obviously, there's going to be more obvious names on the way. Any surprises on that list, Ollie? I mean, I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at Luis Suarez there, and I'm thinking, what's he done to earn a spot on that list?
Yeah, but I mean, I can't remember which award it was particularly, but it just seems like it's the same shortlist every single year.
FIFA, you know, Pro, I think, is the one.
It was just absolutely absurd. People like Mascherano getting on there and things like that. It's the usual suspects. I mean, as you said, it's utterly pointless because we all know who the top three are going to be anyway. So,
right,
you know, this thing seems kind of pointless to me. Looking at it, Coutinho has done well to get on there. He has been good recently, but is he really one of the best players in the world this year? I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be Ronaldo or Messi, isn't it? We all know that.
Mo, any surprises on that list for you?
Luis Suarez is a surprise because when he was actually good, they didn't nominate him.
Yeah.
Now he's probably had his worst season in, I don't know, got long time. They've nominated him. I mean, you know, 2015-16, statistically, they were going by stats for a lot of the time, and he had more goals and assists than anyone else in the world for that season. They didn't nominate him then. Now they've nominated him now when he's actually like looks like he's almost done, really, like Torres himself, you know.
The full list will be fully revealed by, hang on, I was checking this earlier, at 6:15. So at 6:15, you'll have all the names, and we'll see if there's any more surprising lists there. We've had a question from David Denosa, who asks, have the pod...
Yeah.
Guests got any hipster suggestions for a Ballon d'Or winner? They might yet to be announced.
Dries Mertens.
I was going to say that.
it's the hipster.
He's on the list.
Yeah. Oh, you mean
he's nominated?
Hasn't been announced yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Hipster suggestions for a Ballon d'Or winner or a nominee.
Someone that hasn't been nominated.
So, a hipster suggestion for a Ballon d'Or winner. Really, the best player in the world, Dries Mertens.
Sergio
Busquets. He's never on the list.
Ballon d'Or winner. There's your hipster suggestion.
Ollie.
Is Marek Hamšík on the list yet?
He's not yet. I reckon he will be, but that's a good shout.
I just love Marek Hamšík. He's just great. He's been the same player for 10 years, just doing it consistently week in, week out, being a key part of that Napoli squad. And he's stuck there. He stayed there when big players have left. So I'd love to see him win trophies and get some individual recognition as well.
You want to see him win trophies?
Yeah.
Yeah? How many?
I love Napoli. All of them.
Everyone loves all watching Napoli play at the moment. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Okay, it's almost time to wrap up, but before we do, it's time for the Q&A. And we'll start off with a question from Miles Herbert. He asks, seeing Pulisic show his class on Friday night, a question from an American to some Brits. What club would be the best for him? I mean, Dortmund's pretty good.
Dortmund, where he is the best for him right now. In the future...
I think Miles is thinking like a top club.
He's a right-footed wing forward, and Barcelona are now playing with Messi as a false nine again and need a right-footed left forward. Mm. They've got Ousmane Dembele, his former teammate, on the other side. It's a perfect fit. Mm. We all know Barcelona board worships only money. That's a lot of money in the American market right there.
Allegedly. Ollie?
Man United? I can see him going to Man United. I mean, you know, perhaps less so in the post-Fergie era, but, you know, it's always been a club that have loved wingers, and he's the perfect out-and-out winger. He gets the ball and he's electrifying.
He plays 10 for the USA.
Yeah, I mean, he's so talented, though. I saw him at Wembley a few weeks ago, and just when he gets the ball, you'd feel like something's going to happen. Yeah. His close control is unbelievable. Yeah. He's quick. He has end product. He really is, I think, the real deal, and...
He's the player that American fans of the men's game, we should say, have been waiting for a long time. The women have had their world-class players for a while now. They've been brilliant, but the men's game have not had a world-class player.
Yes.
And now they finally get one in America, so they'll be very happy about that.
Really interesting. Great, great talent. Q&A number two. Mohamed Khurshid asks, a bit left field, Mo, I'm going to throw this one your way. If Barca decide to join the Premier League... with the huge money inflow, will they be the best transfer destination in the world?
Yeah. I mean, you could argue they're already one of the two best anyway.
Along with who?
With Real Madrid. I mean, if you want to include Man City in there, Man United too, maybe. But they're definitely already top five anyway. They're going to the Premier League with all the money and marketing and actual sane governance that the Premier League brings versus La Liga. I mean, absolutely unquestioned. Who wouldn't want to go there and play with Lionel Messi in a well-run league?
Oh, they're really milking Lionel Messi for all he's worth, isn't he? He's going to get old eventually, Barcelona fans.
Well, he's 30 now, isn't it?
Sorry. Oh, God, yeah. It's
transitioning to the next phase of his career.
Sad, sad time. Final question. Lack of Dignity, a bit of a regular recently, asks...
I love that name.
Ollie, why is the Arsenal injury room full again? I think he's referring to the fact that Koscielny, Mustafi and Chambers are all injured. So it looks like Arsenal have a bit of a centre-back crisis. That's never happened before. and obviously, with Arsenal's propensity to play three at the back at the moment... that's a bit awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, basically, since they've switched to a back three, they've always had about five centre-backs injured. So maybe that points at a bit of an issue. They're just all charging around, getting hamstring injuries.
Could we see Monreal, Kolasinac and...
Well, Monreal's getting rave reviews at the moment, isn't he?
He's playing brilliantly.
He's holding the defence up on his own. So maybe they'll be all right. But Arsenal always have injuries. It's just, you know... We're just used to it now, yeah, exactly.
It's funny how that's sort of gone away in recent years. It seems like the last 18 months, the whole Arsenal injury crisis was holding them back. Now people are saying that it's not the case. It's just they're bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you just wonder what's going on there. It's always Arsenal that always seem to have injuries, and minor injuries become major injuries. You know, it's like, oh, this guy's out for 2 weeks. Oh, now he needs surgery. Oh, he's gone for 7 months.
Yeah. Johnny seems to be breaking down a lot more regularly now as well, which is a big worry because
who?
Koscielny. He seems to be getting a lot of little knocks here.
Had a bad start to the season.
He relies
as well.
On pace. That's the problem. He's always been a defender who relies very much on his athletic ability. Yeah. And if that deserts him, he's in trouble, because a lot of what he does that's so good is being able to have recovery pace and also being able to step up really quickly and intercept things. If he can't do that, he's going to rely on his positional sense, which is not the best. So.
Okay, well, lack of dignity. Hope that answers your question. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much to Ollie and Mo for joining me today. Before we go, a brief mention for Defending in Numbers. Yes, I'm mentioning it again. It's a Deezer original. It's made by the people who make the Squawker Talker. Guess who that is? It's available on iTunes. Please subscribe. Please check it out on Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast. And, well, if you like it, subscribe to Deezer as well, because they have lots of other fun Deezer originals. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks very much for your questions as ever, and we'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.